This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So I'm looking at a piece on SNY.TV. That is the sports network of New York.
So is it SNY or is it Yes Network?
Those are two separate things.
They are?
Yeah.
They are? Okay.
Yeah, those are two separate. Yes Network is the Yankees network. SNY is sort of like the Fox Sports Southwest of the New York area. Yeah. So so there's an article on SNY.TV from someone named Andy Martino who says that Yankee players and coaches became angry with the Astros during game one of the ALCS, which the Yankees won, when they noticed a whistling sound in the Astros dugout, which they believed was an over-the-line example of sign stealing and a violation.
Here we go.
Game's unwritten rules. According to three sources, a Yankees coach noticed a whistling sound in the opposing dugout on certain pitches on Saturday night in Houston. The Yankees started yelling across the field, and people in the dugouts argued back and forth. Said one source, quote, "The whole dugout was pissed. Everyone was chirping." For several years, widespread suspicion has followed the Astros.
Well, ever since the Red Sox got caught doing it outright, there's been suspicion of anybody that's doing well in the postseason.
Yeah, that was a year ago.
Right.
For several years.
Well, no, the Apple Watch was like three years
ago. Oh, the Apple Watch. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so for several years, widespread suspicion has followed the Astros about aggressive sign stealing, especially at Minute Maid Park. Although most teams engage in some form of this activity, several executives and current and former players said on Wednesday that whistling was over the line.
It's interesting because last year they actually weren't all that great at home compared to on the road. And yet, but now that they were good at home this year, it becomes, oh, yeah, well, because they're
clearly there's shenanigans.
Clearly, the whistling helped them so much in that game where the Astros were shut out. So they obviously got to 107 wins and having one of the best offenses in baseball by whistling, because that's how you get to, that's how you score zero runs against the Yankees.
Whatever they were doing on Saturday, they either sucked at it or Tanaka is superhuman, if it was that significant. So these unwritten rules.
Well, this is where they interviewed another. Do we have any whistling music?
Is that what we think they? Is that that's
that wouldn't be that loud? We could have picked that up. We would have heard that. It must have been like a quick little. That would be.
That could have been a compliment. That could have been like. Play that one again, Jonesy. That could have been like. Ooh, what a pitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. That's right? That's how I would do it. Except you're doing it, if you're signaling signs, then you're going to do it right before the pitch.
Or play that one again. It could have been, ooh, cute butt, Tanaka. Could have been a compliment. What are they talking about, whistling, stealing signs?
It sounds like what they're upset about is more the actual whistling than the sign stealing. Because you have to remember, all these employees go from club to club, and there's former Astros working for the Yankees. Last year, when the Astros employee got caught with the camera in the photographer's area during the Red Sox series, the first thing you think is, oh, yeah, Alex Cora is the manager of the Red Sox who just came over from the Astros. And whatever he knows about the Astros, there's a little bit of a feel of the Spygate, where when you've got other coaches that used to play for a team, play that team, they know things and they start diming it out.
Yeah.
But you also wonder, okay, what are they using themselves? So it's interesting because they interviewed another coach from another team that said, yeah, I guess it's over the line, but pretty much, like, I don't know what the hell's acceptable anymore.
Yeah.
The lines are getting blurred with all of this stuff that everybody's just super careful about their signs. And it just bothers me because I'll go and I'll watch Yes Network or one of these New York area stations, and they'll point to, the Rays did the same thing. They'll point to the fact that their pitchers and catchers are using multiple signs because they're afraid of sign stealing. Well, yes, but the Astros are also doing that. So by your logic, then the Rays and or the Yankees are cheating just because you're taking measures to try to not get caught, show your signs.
Yeah, my feeling on this is always, unless they're using technology to do it, which that's illegal. They shouldn't be using technology. Well, if they're just doing it through their own acumen and picking things up out there, that's like picking up a tell in poker to me. Get better signs.
At this point, though,
stop eating Oreo cookies every time you feel like you got a good pitch, like Teddy KGB in Rounders.
Do you not assume that a lot of teams are using electronic media or electronic devices to pick up signs?
They may be. And if they get caught, they should get slammed for it. But like this whole thing about where they were whistling and they...
Yeah. That's an unwritten rule. If you're talking about, oh, no, that's an unwritten rule. They're upset about the whistling. However, they're actually stealing the signs.
Yes.
They're using whistling to relay it. They're not happy with that.
Yeah, whatever. Look, if they're using untoward, illegal ways to go steal the signs...
But show me the evidence.
Right.
That's the problem.
If the Astros are doing that, they should be punished. There's no question about it. Complaining about them communicating in some way on the field that's sort of gamesmanship, it could be... There are a lot of very pleasant tunes out there that are whistling. The theme song to the Andy Griffith Show is one of the most pleasant whistling tunes of all time.
This is what we should do. This is what we need to do is we need to troll the Yankees on Saturday. This music needs to be played liberally.
Throughout batting practice.
While Tanaka's out there, during getting his warm-ups beforehand and whatnot.
That would be funny.
This is where Astros fans need to get wise to this. Don't make the same mistake or go down the same road that New England Patriots fans have, which is to spend two decades being irrationally sensitive about what people outside your region are saying and accusing you of. Just own it. Just understand and accept that with great success, people will accuse you of cheating because they are in a sad and lonely place, and you have to just lord over them and mock them for it.
Okay, turn this up a little bit, Jonesy. That would be really trolling if they played the whistling part, but then they brought in like a brass band to play the play this part.
Well, they do that every now and then. Then it almost becomes too much of a New Orleans thing. If you started bringing the band in and you're walking around and everything with
big drum, a tuba.
Then you're genuinely having too much fun. It needs to be just whistling. Whatever the acapella thing is. Is there a term for just whistling? Like acapella whistling?
There probably is. So you're saying the Astros should embrace their heel role in this whole thing?
Yeah, they do. They need to really embrace it. They need to just go ahead and bathe in the tears of Yankees fans.
Do you think sometimes people are too scared to be the villain? The Astros shouldn't be scared to be the villain.
No, not at all. You have to accept that you're never going to get credit from your enemies. If that's what you're looking for in life, then you're going to die angry.
Yeah.
So never try to find validation by getting credit from your enemies.
Win titles by any means necessary. Yeah. Ric Flair, by God, was a 16-time world champion. He was the dirtiest player in the game. Now he's the most popular former wrestler on planet Earth, Ric Flair.
I feel like that might not be the best analogy.
What are you talking about? We've got Josh Reddick wears a robe to the stadium.
Yeah, but it's also in professional wrestling, the fans almost enter a contract into, hey, we're all part of this game and this show here, and the villain is the hero a lot of times versus in actual sports, it's a little bit different than that.
I saw the Joker last night, and he was a sympathetic figure by the end of that movie.
Uh-huh.
Do you think maybe the Astros had some issues in their earlier life? Maybe they have daddy issues.
It does become that way 40 years
That's
from now.
That's why they cheat and steal signs.
40 years from now, people will be saying, like, oh, yeah, those Patriots, they just did whatever it took. It's kind of the same way, oh, Goose Gossage. Like, oh, or any of those guys. Wait, was Goose Gossage a notorious spitballer?
No, he was a flame. You're thinking of Gaylord Perry.
Gaylord Perry, the notorious foreign substances. Now they talk about it lovingly. Like, oh,
right.
Well, boy, you know, back then times were different.
It was cute. Let's put him in the Hall of Fame.
How come he's so noted for it? So likewise, whatever comes of it 20, 30 years from now, it all becomes just a cute story.
Okay.
Like, oh, those football players in the 80s, they sure did do a lot of steroids.
Right.
It was a different time.
Hey, lovable. It's paying $10,000 to sign autographs. All right. Someone is saying they should play the Andy Griffith theme during mound visits. To play, look. Can you imagine?
So
this would be the Yankees pitching coach is walking out, or their manager Aaron Boone's walking to the mound.
Yeah, you want to do it when Tanaka's on the mound.
Yeah,
I like that a lot. Are you allowed to do that? I'm always. I never know when you're allowed to play music or not in baseball. Everything's so careful.
No,
God forbid you show a replay. Don't show a replay or explain any calls.
No,
we want to make the actual in-game experience far inferior to watching on television.
Some places play songs that map to the moment in the game. They were reviewing a replay in the baseball game the other night, and I forget what song they were playing in the stadium, but it was something about, or it might have been at a football game. It was some song about holding up the call. I get like that, you know, that like let it stand or let the call. I forget what song it was, but the theme of the song was to, oh, it was Let It Be. That's what it was. I forget what game it was, but during the game there was a challenge that if it were overturned, it would have been to the detriment of the home team. So the stadium played Let It Be by the Beatles.
Yeah.
That's creative.
Yeah.
If you played that whistling thing as the Yankees either pitching coach or manager were walking to the mound to go talk to Tanaka, I think that would be a very good, subtle, low-key way to troll the Yankees.
It would be fun.
And it would be funny as hell.
And let's just have all the guys in the dugout smirking about it. You know who would love that is Bregman.
Yes.
Bregman would just be
Bregman would do it.
Bregman would hit 4 home runs just because of that.
Yes.
He would just love it. And he'd go whistling. You know what? I almost guarantee you that Bregman, if the next home run he hits, will be whistling around the bases. He'll be whistling a tune as he's,
We need a close-up.
Or he'll whistle at the dugout, at the Yankees dugout.
There will be
something.
Whistling. Yeah. There will be whistling, yeah, for sure. I'm not even joking. Like that's not even out of bounds. If you were to play the Andy Griffith theme,
stoppage. But you know how these things work. There's going to be somebody in management or somebody that disapproves.
No, they're not going to do it.
Yeah,
I know that.
But Bregman will.
Yeah, Bregman. Yeah, but it would be nice if all 43,000 people in the stadium could join in. You know what I mean? Like
I would gladly trade the woo for whistling.
Are you tired of the woo?
Yeah, it was 2 years ago.
Okay.
I can't.
Is that why you didn't like my Ric Flair analogy just then?
No.
Subtly?
I didn't subtly dislike it. I thought you were joking. Like you definitely.
No, Ric Flair's very popular.
No, I know he's very popular, but being popular as a wrestler is different than being popular as an athlete. There are a lot of wrestlers that, if they tried the exact same thing as athletes, would not be popular.
Yeah, that's true.
Not popular at all, yeah. Especially like with all the betrayals and whatnot.
That's true. I guess
if Bregman one day all of a sudden decided on his way to the mound to dropkick Garrett Cole because he doesn't like him.
That's a fair point.
The people would turn on Bregman.
Pulled out brass knuckles and punched George Springer in the face. That would be bad. No, you're right about that. Yeah, baby. We need 9 whistling songs for walk-up music for the Astros lineup.
Remember now that the Yankees are complaining about the Astros stealing signs in a game where the Astros didn't score a single run.
Right.
This is and had 3 hits in game 1. Yeah,
the bats were terrible. Someone clarified the stadium, the game that I was watching, where the home team audio team played "Let It Be"
during a review
that where an overturn would have been to the detriment of the home team was Baylor. The Baylor PA guy or the Baylor sound crew, production crew in stadium. Plays Let It Be when they don't want a call to be overturned.
That's very funny. I'm always impressed when sober people come up with funny things.
Yeah.
You know, which Baylor, at least you're pretending to be sober most of the time, right? Those kids get a 4-year education in pretending to be sober.
Yeah, I had a funny text from my son the other day. I can't go find it.
You got to be careful. You're going to get your son expelled.
I know. That's what
you said.
Yeah.
Something on air the other day. I'm like, Sean, he's a failure. Yeah. Shut up about what your son's doing in his off time.
I know. I'm sorry. He was texting me about Bible study.
Sean's son, who has a different last name.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. It's your son.
Did I say Baylor?
Jaime McBridleworth is his son's name, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It was rare that they let the Protestant Irish guy in there.
Yeah, they're diversifying for sure. Yeah.
Were you good? Did you grow up like heavily Catholic?
You're
Irish?
No, I wouldn't say heavily. Baptized Catholic.
Yeah.
But not, you know, I didn't go to Catholic. Like
you didn't
Notre
go to,
Dame was the first private Catholic school I ever went to.
Okay, I got you.
I went to public schools.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have like any
in the mean streets of Simsbury, Connecticut.
You don't have any like the stereotypical like, oh, I grew up in an Irish family and your mom was
no,
like doing rosaries all day long.
No. I think Amy's family is more Catholic than my family. Amy's mom worked in the Catholic Church downtown for many, many years.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So
in Houston or New Orleans?
In Houston.
Okay.
Yeah, in Houston.
Sir. I'm mixing up.
Yeah, Amy's my soon-to-be wife.
Yeah.
You're thinking of my ex-wife.
Sorry.
Okay. Note to self, Amy. Don't bring up any more marriage stuff with Seth.
I get your backstory confused sometimes.
That's
I forget that Amy didn't grow up in New Orleans.
She did not.
She's got a New Orleans vibe to her.
She definitely does.
Because she knows how to party.
Exactly.
She has fun.
I've got a type.
Whenever I meet somebody down here that has fun, I'm like, oh, they must be from New Orleans originally.
She's from here, ironically. She loves New Orleans.
Prison partying like it's a business.
That's right. That's right. So 2 weeks ago, Seth, we were going through. This is, let's put ourselves in the moment. 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we're coming off Texans loss to the Carolina Panthers. That was abysmal. It was. They had just beaten the Chargers a week before. There's all sorts of momentum. Kyle Allen is starting for the Panthers. We're talking about, hey, this got a pretty good chance to go 4-1 heading into that Chiefs game. That's going to be a big deal. And what happens? They lay an egg against the Carolina Panthers. So what happens 3 days later? Well, it's about that time of year where the odds for the first coach to be fired in the NFL come out. Jay Gruden is the heavy favorite, and it turns out that ticket cashed in just a few days later. But tied for number two on that list at the time were Dan Quinn of the Falcons and Bill O'Brien of the Texans, who ironically were playing each other that coming weekend.
Yeah.
They were both 4-1 on the list. Here we are 2 weeks later, and this will be an odds board that's going to continue to come out. Jay Gruden got fired, so now the odds board is next head coach to leave his position. They leave his position, not be fired, is how they phrase it. You know, 2019, you got to be sensitive. Next NFL head coach to leave position. Not shockingly, Dan Quinn is the favorite now, the odds-on favorite at 3-2. I think, and maybe this is just the whimsical nature of how the NFL gets processed when you win a couple games in a row, especially a marquee game like the Texans did this past weekend. O'Brien is nowhere to be found on the list anymore.
That's right.
He went from number two on the list to be fired first, and within 14 days, he's not even on the radar anymore, which I don't think he shouldn't have been on the radar in the first place.
Right. That was kind of strange, just given the fact of how recently he got his extension, the trades they just pulled off, the fact that they don't have a general manager. There are a lot of reasons. Even if you want Bill O'Brien fired or wanted him fired, you'd have to concede, okay, but it's not happening anytime soon.
Right.
So it's interesting. The psychology of the actual owners is interesting to me in these situations, because you look at, okay, Dan Quinn, the Falcons. Dan Quinn has that grace period where they'd gone to a Super Bowl, and you're going to give him the benefit of the doubt for a little bit, but that's
even rapidly, with the way that Super Bowl went?
That was right, exactly. Even though the head coach himself, just by pulling the reins in on his offensive coordinator a little bit, they would have won it. But you understand why you stick with him. You understand the next year they go deep in the playoffs.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like it was this vast decline immediately afterwards.
Correct.
So Anthony Lynn's running out of excuses, too.
Real quick, just so people know, Anthony Lynn and Jason Garrett are tied for second on the list at 3-1.
So Jason Garrett, this is why I would say that Jason Garrett, even if he's not the coach of the Cowboys next year, shouldn't be on this list at all, because of the history of Jerry Jones and the way he handles players with whom he has an emotional attachment. So, and I'm going to include Jason Garrett on this, because let's remember, he spent the vast majority of his career playing for the Cowboys or backing up for the Cowboys.
Is Tony Romo sort of the patron saint of that?
Tony Romo, yeah. Dez Bryant, he has a history. Jerry Jones has a history of delaying these decisions, sometimes really to the detriment of the player, where he held out with Tony Romo, wouldn't trade him, until finally Tony Romo just decided to retire. Who knows what would have happened if teams had actually been allowed to talk to Tony Romo. If the Texans had been
Texans
able to talk to Tony Romo and say, hey, buddy, come on down here. You'll be the key. You can go visit your family, whatever. They did the same thing with Dez Bryant. Waited, finally pulled the trigger. And in that instance, too, kind of screwed over the player, because it was after free agency all started and everything. I don't think that if Jason Garrett gets... He wouldn't get fired because it's the last year of his contract. But if he doesn't get retained, it's going to be... in the offseason. It wouldn't be during the season.
I would agree with that. So it goes Dan Quinn 3-2, basically 1.5-1. Anthony Lynn and Jason Garrett both at 3-1. You see who's there at 4-1, Seth?
Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel, 4-1. Mike Vrabel, all of a sudden, who was this time last year, was a darling. They started out 3-1. Remember, they started out 3-1, and they beat the Eagles. Mm-hmm. They beat the Patriots. Like, they were beating good teams early on last season. And Mike Vrabel was the darling of football. Now he's benching his quarterback. He's relying on Ryan Tannehill has to fish Mike Vrabel's bacon out of the fire. How terrible a feeling is that?
I think he's safe. And
I think he is too.
I think the reason he's safe is that they've done some good things on defense, and that's his area of specialty. Even though he is a defensive coordinator, had an atrocious defense, that's his area of specialty. And it's easy to blame this one on the quarterback situation. Yeah. That just like when Gary Kubiak got hired here, and he always felt like part of it was, oh, maybe he can come in and make something of David Carr. But if after it doesn't work out after a couple of years, it's easy to excuse it. And I think right now it's not like Vrabel is the first to fail at making Mariota a better quarterback. Mariota hasn't really shown a whole lot of promise since 3 years ago.
Right.
And that was for a minor stretch of games during that season. I think he gets excused here. The question, of course, becomes, okay, what the hell are you going to do moving forward? Who's going to be the worst team in the AFC South 2 years from now?
Not the Texans, and that feels good.
I would say right now it's because you'll have question marks about the quarterback still in Jacksonville.
I'm going to say Jacksonville.
Yeah,
I'm going to say Jacksonville just because that's, other than the year that they spiked up and got to the AFC title game, that's the one where it feels like the coach is on the shakiest ground. Maybe even that's the one that it feels like the whole infrastructure is on the shakiest ground, right? You know, who knows how long Tom Coughlin is in this for. The general manager has now survived a couple of head coaches. He's got to be on the hot seat at this point. And then Doug Marrone is next on this list at 5-1, which I think Doug Marrone deserves to be on a list like this, whereas I think Vrabel's not in any danger. You make a good case for Jason Garrett. I think Anthony Lynn is probably fine. They won double-digit games last year. Doug Marrone deserves to be on this list. I think he is on the hot seat right now.
You made a really good point, and you could turn this into a negative or a positive. That three of the coaches on this list lost to Bill O'Brien, right?
So far this year. The Texans 4 wins. Of their 4 wins, 3 of them are over coaches who are in the top 5 on this next coach to be fired list.
So on the plus side, I would say, wow, Bill O'Brien's a coach killer.
Coach killer, baby.
On the downside, I would say, wait a second. Okay, how good are the Texans at 4-2 if 3 of the guys they've beaten are on hot seats? I don't know. Is he the guy that pushes them over the edge?
I don't know. You know what? I'll tell you this. If they hadn't beaten Kansas City this week, those would have been his only 3 wins of the year.
No,
the Kansas City win changes the calculus on a lot of stuff for the Texans.
Honestly, the Texans could be 3-3 right now, and it's the way the season has unfolded that I feel really good about them, and it's based on these last 2 games almost exclusively.
Yeah.
Before that, I felt like, okay, this is a 500 team. So if the Texans were 3-3 right now because they had lost to, say, Jacksonville, I would still feel like, oh, all of a sudden, O'Brien and Deshaun are clicking. There's something different here. I feel good about this.
Yeah, I think the last 2 games, and I honestly, if I'm ranking the games in terms of how they make me feel about the Texans, the New Orleans game might be 3rd on the list, and they lost that game.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of just how I feel about the ceiling for this football team. All right, so the Texans under Bill O'Brien are trying to go to 5-2 this weekend for the first time with him as the head coach. They've been 4-2 one other time. It was in 2016. And 3 years ago to the week, Seth, 3 years ago to the week, the Texans were actually coming off a victory over the Colts. They play the Colts this weekend in Indianapolis. 3 years ago to the week, the Texans were coming off a win over the Colts at home on Sunday Night Football, where they came back from down 14 with 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and they won in overtime of that game. The quarterback that night for the Texans was one Brock Aloysius Osweiler. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his middle name is Aloysius, but that's what I give everybody who I don't know their middle name. So he was the quarterback that night for the, and I would say undoubtedly that was the high point of the Brock Osweiler era, without a doubt. A week later,
he throws and he made it at the end of that game. Yes.
Correct, yeah. Yes, where he just tossed it up in the air and Jalen Strong went up and caught it, and they completely botched the coverage on C.J. Fedorowicz for the tying touchdown. All those things. The very next week, he was thrumbling on national television against the Denver Broncos. About a month later, he's benched for Tom Savage. Week 17, he's getting into fights with Bill O'Brien in the locker room.
Oh, yeah, that's right. False imprisonment.
Yeah, right. He was held hostage.
Supposedly.
Literally, those were the words he used, supposedly.
Supposedly, yeah. Bill O'Brien wouldn't let him. Let me leave, William O'Brien.
Right. Billy the Bully.
O'Brien's, thou shalt not pass.
That's right. So, why are we bringing up Brock Osweiler? Because yesterday came the announcement, Seth, that Brock Osweiler has called it a career. He is retiring from football.
Oh.
The Brock Osweiler era is over.
Is he retiring or is he quitting?
He's retiring. His statement says he's retiring.
If I say he's quitting, am I going to get treated like I made a slur against an ethnic group or something
in
the media? Or okay.
Right. Tall people. You're clearly a tallest. You're a heightest.
This player quit. Oh!
Yeah. Here is Brock's statement, and I'm going to read it, and you can choose to hear it in Brock's voice. I am extremely grateful for the time I did play did receive playing in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not joking. This is Brock Osweiler. I am extremely grateful for the time I did receive playing in the National Football
Hell,
League.
You have LeBron.
LeBronitis. The experiences.
You're using too many words.
The experiences I did have, the people I did meet, relationships I did make. I'm not going to dwell on the things that didn't happen in my career. Being a kid from Kalispell, Montana, playing for the Denver Broncos, winning a Super Bowl, having the opportunity to sign a second contract. When you look back on it, I couldn't be more appreciative. It was great.
Mm.
That statement is a troll job, and I'm going to tell you why right now. He basically puts signing and fleecing the Texans for $37 million. Ultimately, the Browns paid part of it.
Did he mention the Super Bowl at all?
He did.
He did? Okay.
He said, being a kid from Kalispell, Montana, playing for the Broncos,
yeah.
Doesn't mention any other teams,
yeah.
Winning a Super Bowl,
yeah. Okay.
Having the opportunity to sign a second contract.
Yeah.
When you look back at it, I couldn't be more appreciative. It was great.
Hey, did he play out that contract? Because he played.
No, he would be in the fourth year.
No,
of
no,
that
I
contract.
Know. But when he went to Cleveland. Right. Cleveland then ultimately released him. Right? They didn't trade him.
They released
anywhere.
Him, but okay. They had to pay him his salary.
Right, right, right. Year. I know they had to pay him that year. Now I'm just curious, like how long he actually played out that contract? Because I thought
years.
Maybe after Cleveland, somebody could have bought that out or something.
No,
he
2 years.
Paying, okay.
Yeah, 2 years. He was then he was a Bronco and then a Dolphin, probably playing on minimum deals.
So he got four contracts out of it too.
He did.
So he's specifically mentioning the second contract.
The opportunity to sign a second contract.
Yeah, yeah.
That's him. That is Brock Osweiler. I don't know if he's doing it intentionally or unintentionally, but if I were a Texan fan, and I am, I read that and I'm like, oh God. Now I'm happy we have Deshaun Watson now. You know what? There's only one way to truly pay homage to Brock Osweiler, and that's to remember all the great Brock Osweiler moments, all of which occurred in post-game press conferences, not in games.
I've had great success in this league playing football. You know, anytime you can get a win, whether it's preseason, regular season, it doesn't matter. Winning's a great thing. And at the end of the day, football in the National Football League is about one thing, winning, period.
I think the proof is in the film for the past 2 years.
And once again, you know, that falls onto me. And there's no one who's going to study the tape harder to figure out why we didn't score a touchdown on that drive and what we can do different next time to make sure that that drive does end in points. There was a couple goal balls. I think they landed out of bounds. That is unacceptable. I have to give my receiver a chance. I'm pretty sure, could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure in the history of the game, no ball has ever been completed that was thrown out of bounds. So that's unacceptable, and I'll get that cleaned up this week in practice.
Shoot, I would come back here to be the water boy. You know, it's funny. I went in to go get cleats today, and they asked what cleats I want. I said, I don't care. Just give me something. I'll go out there and bare feet today. I'm ecstatic to be back here. You know, it's kind of like that old deal when, you know, you're a little kid and your mom, you know, she tells you don't touch the hot stove. So what do you have to do as a curious kid? You got to go touch the hot stove and you learn real quick, you know, how nice that stove is when it's not hot. So needless to say, I'm very thankful to be back here. You know, I'm in the wrong business.
You're in the business of retirement. You are in the right business, my friend.
I remember how much you hated that he botched that hot stove analogy. He turned it into something that never actually happens. Like the analogy is you never really, your mom will tell you not to, but until you accidentally do it, you don't really learn the lesson. In Brock's mind, it was, oh, my mom told me not to touch the hot stove, so I'm going to specifically go over and touch it just to test to see if she's lying.
My issue was the hot stove in that case
yeah.
was signing a $37 million guarantee with the Texans.
That's right. Yeah, he acted like, leaving for somewhere else. Because in his mind, he was the victim and Bill O'Brien was the bully.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Bill O'Brien always used to talk about Tom Brady this, Tom Brady that. I'm Brock Osweiler, and you know what? I don't like talking about Tom Brady. Or, yeah. Remember he said that? He said, these guys talk a lot about Tom Brady, but yeah. I'm my own guy. Yeah, that's the problem.
Damn right. Brock, that's the most accurate thing that bastard ever said.
Problem is, you're Brock Osweiler. As I'm listening to all those, though, if you were a good quarterback, it would actually be, I think all of those statements you would dismiss how they're all a little bit off target, but it would be kind of quirky and charming if he was a really good quarterback. But it drove you crazy because he wasn't.
How badly do you want to see Brock Osweiler on television doing one of those studio shows?
Oh, he wouldn't. The problem is he would get hired, but he'd kind of be like some guys that they're good looking. They speak well for the most part, but there's just something missing. There's not a spark there, and they would realize it pretty quickly that there's no spark there necessarily.
No, but there could be a ton of unintentional comedy.
I say that, but I've got a really bad track record of predicting who's going to be good in media. Like, I didn't think Tebow was going to be good in media because I thought he'd be too bland. He's been really good.
He's been good.
I really enjoy him.
Yeah.
So maybe he would actually be good. The one thing, and the thing that I had forgotten, and now it drives me crazy hearing it, is when he said, as far as I know, a ball that's been thrown out of bounds has never gone for reception. You know why that drives me crazy? Because you're the one clown that didn't realize that throwing the ball out of bounds to DeAndre Hopkins is the smartest thing you can do.
Right.
Throw it out of bounds, yeah. And DeAndre will come down with it.
Yeah.
It's only landing out of bounds because you don't have any touch.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did you... Should we not replay that again at 9:30?
No, it was fun. I like the music. I've never gotten sick of that Eric Clapton sad song.
I know.
Song.
I just don't think too much
about the backstory.
Yeah, true. Well, that's why we didn't play the lyrics, too.
You know who really the Texans have to blame for the whole Brock Osweiler era? Is Gary Kubiak.
Yeah.
Kubiak made Brock Osweiler look like a viable NFL quarterback.
He did.
It looked like he could at least be somebody that could be a game manager.
That was Gary Kubiak's final punishment to the Texans for firing him.
Yeah.
2 years later, as he duped them into thinking Brock Osweiler was good. I think when we hear Brock quotes, though, and we'll get to headlines here in just a minute, is, look, when the news came down that he retired yesterday, I must have gotten 15 tweets that said every retirement has a story.
I think every interception really has a different story.
Yeah, so there you go.
But it is true.
Shout out to our former colleague, Paul Gallant, for asking that question.
If that were Brock Osweiler MVP candidate and he said that, I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, that's really deep. That is true. Every interception is different in its own right. They're like snowflakes.
I think every interception really has a different story.
Yeah. They're like snowflakes with where each little spindle is a dagger of death.
I want a Brock Osweiler interception storybook. I want him to now do a children's book where each chapter is him telling a story about all of his interceptions.
And there were many. It's a pop-up book.
Yeah.
He's got a cardigan on, and he's sitting, and some kid is squirming on his lap that really doesn't want to be there. Just stay there, son. Your mom will be back in time. Let's read this book about my interceptions.
That which I threw to another team in the National Football League. There's a lot of LeBron and Brock similar. They're not at how good they are at their jobs. LeBron's great at his job, and Brock was terrible at his job.
There's an over-explaining.
Yes!
LeBron is taking a saying, like, I don't want to get into a sentence feud.
We should do it.
These are the thoughts I have in my brain.
We need to do a game where we read transcripts of quotes from LeBron James and Brock Osweiler. We have to guess who they're from.
How about Brock? Is he holding a squirming child on his lap and wearing his cardigan, reading the pop-up book about his interceptions?
Yeah,
he'll get to chapter 7 and be like, oh, actually, here's a twist in the plot. This isn't actually an interception, but what the time I threw for a fumble.
No one had ever done it before, and no one's done it again. Let's do headlines, Jonesy. There were no baseball games yesterday because Mother Nature was angry up in New York. She rained and rained and rained and rained all over Yankee Stadium, and thus there will be no more off days. No days off in this ALCS, my friend, as the Astros and the Yankees will hook up in Game 4 tonight. Game 5 will be played tomorrow in what would have been a travel day, and instead they will travel back to Houston after the game on Friday and hopefully not play Game 6 or 7 because that means the Astros will have won in 5. But if there is a Game 6 or 7 necessary, it'll be Saturday and Sunday. What do you think of the respective decisions by the manager, Seth Payne, to pitch Greinke and Tanaka tonight, and specifically to AJ Hinch has already announced Verlander's going to pitch in Game 5.
I think both these guys, both these managers, Boone and Hinch, have both talked about how you're trying to make strategic decisions knowing that you're in a 7-game series, but it's really also you got to balance that with, hey, we got to win right now. And right now, your best option to win is you dance with the one who's brung you, which is your starting pitchers. And I think that's a smart thing to do. You hold that in reserve. I like it. I don't want Gerrit Cole to pitch on short rest, but there might come a scenario where you feel better about Gerrit Cole going out in Game 6 than Game 7. You have that option now where you might not have had it necessarily. It wouldn't have been as feasible before.
Yeah, both bullpens get rest yesterday. Obviously, the Yankees needed it far more than the Astros did. The Yankees' bullpen has pitched more than 12 innings. The Astros' bullpen has not even pitched 7 innings in Games 2 and 3. Not in the entire series, but in Games 2 and 3. So I think the Yankees in the short term benefit more from that day off yesterday. They need Tanaka to go deep in this game tonight. The Yankees do.
The Yankees do, right.
Yeah, the Yankees, the Astros don't. They need to knock out Tanaka in the second inning, yeah.
I think he's out all year. I think, you know, that's, you know, yes, you know, it's too bad. I hate it for him, but, you know, it's too bad.
That's Mike D'Antoni. And that's Mike D'Antoni talking about Gerald Green, who it looks like is going to be out for the season with a Lisfranc injury.
Oh.
Yeah. We like Gerald Green.
Yeah.
Gerald Green's not super playable come postseason time, but in the regular season, there's at least two or three fun Gerald Green games where he goes like 7 for 11 from three.
Was it a fun game last night for the Rockets?
It was not. They lost.
It was not. It was
128-114 to the Spurs.
They looked like a team that not only had just gotten back from Japan, but that it also had been at the center of an international controversy. How do they say it in Britain? Controversy.
Controversy.
An international controversy.
Right, right, right.
I only know that from watching World Cup every now and then. They looked dead tired. Although Harden became only the. It's a preseason record.
Yeah.
And it.
Yeah, he Harden's went 40-10 last year.
Harden's always setting some kind of weird record, but the first time somebody's had 40 points and 10 rebounds in a preseason game.
If I'm Harden, I don't even want the team putting out that I set a preseason record at anything.
Yeah.
Because all that does is the Harden haters then smell blood. Oh, sure, yeah. Look. Getting it done in the preseason, I see.
There's a conspicuous lack of Chinese characters at Toyota Center these days. A lot of the sponsors have been removed.
Do you mean like letters in the alphabet or actual people who have bubbly personalities who happen to be Chinese?
The actual character, the alphabet, the Chinese alphabet.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That guy's a character.
Yao, at some point, what's going to happen? Did you have to answer a question about Yao? Did somebody ask if people in Houston were mad at Yao?
I was on a Phoenix station yesterday and they asked me, is Houston mad at Yao because he made all his money over here, but he's taking up for the Chinese government?
Yao hasn't been heard from much. He was on the phone with Silver like 20 times a day, apparently.
Tell me if my answer was a good one here. And we'll get to the third headline.
I'm looking at Yao like a guy in a hostage video.
That's kind of what I said. I said, it's tough for me to critique Yao because those are shoes that would be awfully tough to walk
in.
It's
like when you see an American pilot in a hostage video, whatever he's saying, you're like, okay, I know that he's being forced to say that. That's
right.
How we feel about you.
That is how we feel. That's what I said. Good, okay. I gave him the
right
answer.
Did you say that?
I didn't use the hostage video thing, but I said it's kind of tough to walk in the shoes of somebody who's having to put on a happy face of a communist dictatorship.
Yeah.
While living in that country, too, even though he's a very large individual who could beat up any of them.
His joints always hurt.
Speaking of beating up, did you see that Myles Garrett got punched in the face by a fan trying to take a picture?
I saw that. Now, the guy, Myles Garrett called him a fan, but the guy just said he was a fan and wanted a picture, but apparently he just wanted a punch.
Worst fan ever.
I'm wondering if Myles Garrett claims that he just had told the guy that I'm on the phone and just hold on a minute. I wonder if the guy, who's obviously a little psychotic.
Got jerky?
I wonder if the guy got offended like he thought Myles Garrett was being a jerk because he was finishing his phone conversation. I'm not defending the guy, but I'm just trying to figure out why the guy wanted to punch. Myles Garrett, who's a freak of nature, the guy that they arrested is 5'7", 160 pounds.
Oh, God, this is like a bagel guy incident.
Yeah. I wonder if he's trying to go viral. Maybe his buddy back in the car had the...
Maybe. If he's 5'7", he's like a foot taller than bagel guy, but still.
You're 5'7", 160, and you punch Myles Garrett. Listen, buddy, I know, I'm guessing this wasn't an actual tough guy that did it. I know there's some tough guys that could actually do some damage if they know what they're doing.
Like a shoot fighter.
But those guys don't tend to go up to random people and punch them in the face.
After a football game while they're in their car. No. No, they do not.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.